Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No, I'm...
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your App Store and download it now.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Now, you're welcome back. So, lots going on. We had the return of Test rugby over the weekend. 400 days since the last Test match in New Zealand. It was 16-all between New Zealand and Australia in the opening Bledisloe Cup Test in Wellington on Sunday. Two tries, two penalties each. 31,000 fans at the game, mask-free as well. It was like a glimpse into an impossible future. It's a four-match series. We're going to talk to Matt Williams about that later on in the week. But for the time being, to talk about matters closer to home, we are joined by Ronan O'Gara. Evening.
Hey, Joe. How are you?
Very well. I see that La Rochelle beat Bayonne 39-16 on Friday. So is that with you with the feet up, cigars out for the week then? Job done?
Geez, seems like a long time ago now. But it was one of our better performances, good, even though we've only played three games. But we're just hoping the game this weekend goes ahead. Cast of 19 cases, I think. So a decision will be made tomorrow, I believe, on whether that game will go ahead, and then if not, a potential replacement game, because certainly we worked well, I suppose, in pre-season and then throughout the lockdown, and we want to try and play because we need momentum, and when you have it, you don't want to give it away.
19 cases.
Yeah, so it's obviously unlikely, but I think Sir Stade Francais had 35 cases earlier in the season when they went on a pre-season trip. So, yeah, it's obviously averaging over 20,000 cases a day in France, so it's different to where you guys are. But the flip side of it then is obviously just a mask has become a daily part of our apparatus, and you get on with it and you're tested three times a week. So it's quite, I suppose, beneficial in that regard.
Mm. And have you in La Rochelle as a group managed to avoid many cases?
Yes, and we were beginning to wonder, was the testing accurate or was it? Because I think at some stages we had 180, 190 people tested and zero cases. But for months, I think, yeah, touch wood, we've been extremely diligent in our behaviour. But I suppose that's a bit of a crazy thing to say, potentially, because the virus doesn't know who it's attacking or where it's attacking. So it's potluck sometimes in regards who gets it and who doesn't get it. But I suppose in terms of keeping to our rugby bubble, we are recommending the players do that.
Mm. And are Castres and Stade Francais the exceptions, or what's the general landscape across the league at the moment?
No, I think Lyon had cases, Bordeaux had a few cases. But what came at the weekend was it? Clermont, Bordeaux was called off, but the other games went ahead. So usually it's one or two games on average every weekend since the commencement, probably 4 weeks ago. So in that regard, you know, it's going on, and France are getting on with it, and that's the way it is. It's not going to stop, really, unless you have, I suppose, you're crippled with it.
And what's the talk in the country politically then? 20,000 cases a day is obviously a lot. Is that right across the country? Is Paris or a few other places, are they real hotspots? Is there talk of nationwide lockdown coming?
Yeah, I think Paris and Marseille. No, I don't think there will be lockdown at all. I just don't think. I think Macron has said from an economic point of view that it won't be a shutdown again. I think that's the way. I think it's living with the virus seems to be very much the case in France.
Mm. What's the atmosphere like then? I mean, it must be heavy at times, or does it feel lots of days like it's business and rugby as usual when you're in there and you're on the training field?
Yeah, it does actually, Joe, because I suppose you've enough on your plate in that regard, you're kind of, I suppose, consumed by that. But then it becomes I suppose, was it the Thursday before Racing we were due to play, and then they had an outbreak in their camp, so that game was cancelled, and the timing in our schedule was quite good for facing them because they would have been resting a lot of their frontline players, so it would have been an opportunity to get them at a right time, but unfortunately that game didn't go ahead, and we'll meet them probably with a more complete squad later in the season. But that's okay too. It's just, it's very much, you know, I mean, this planning and this stability just doesn't exist anymore. There's very much a daily plan and a weekly plan, and if you get through that, then it's fantastic. But the most important thing, you've got to be incredibly flexible and adaptable for this period of time.
Are there still fans in through the gates?
Well, for the first game against Toulon, would you believe 8,000 people, and we had an incredible atmosphere. So that was 1 and 2, 16,000 being our capacity. And then it was potentially going to be reduced to 5,000 because it's decided by the local prefecture, whatever that is translated in English, a local, I suppose, clerk or whatever the word is, whoever makes that decision. It was down to 5,000. So that's still good, you know, they still can create a lot of noise and a good atmosphere in the ground, but I'm not too sure what decision, if any, has been made for this weekend, but every place is different, obviously. I think Clermont had 10,000 in one of their games, but Bordeaux, I think, were 1,000. So it varies all over France, obviously, and I think Toulon are close to Marseille, and I think that's a hot spot, so it's not not many allowed there.
Okay. Are you missing home?
No, I'm not. I'm focused here. I've heard that my wife was back for a little bit to see her family, but I didn't really enjoy the trip, so I think it's, I suppose, it is what it is for everyone. It's very strange times and difficult times, but I suppose the great thing is that you're together no matter where it is. And whether you're in Ireland or France at this minute, I suppose it's a challenge for everyone and it's a task for everyone. But you always have to look on the positive side of things and make the most of it, Joe, you know, yourself.
It seems, if we kind of segue from that more serious stuff into the less serious stuff of rugby, that Munster managed that this week. They had two positive COVID-19 tests in the squad, so much of their preparation for this win over Edinburgh was done remotely. Johan van Graan was saying, it's the first time I've ever announced a team over Microsoft Teams, but we had to do that 7:30 Thursday evening because that was the only way we were able to manage this week. And they beat Edinburgh 25-23. It's probably an important win in some ways. This was a game they lost last year in Cork, and it meant they didn't get home advantage in the knockout stages. So Edinburgh, obviously, is a good scalp for them to take. Once again, Ben Healy, Sean, he was the hero last week against Scarlets, and at the weekend he kicked 6 penalties, and then he kicked the conversion to CJ Standard's try with just 3 minutes to go. 21 years of age, Munster debut last November, and seems to be made of the right stuff. So, you know, a number 10 who can make clutch kicks. Now, you weren't our first choice to talk about this, but you're all we have here, so you can give us you can give us some insight. So, have you seen much of this guy? We'll get to the kicking in a moment.
I haven't seen much. But I've seen the last two games. So
his general game. His general game. First of all, we'll talk kicking.
Well,
in a
I
moment.
Suppose before you even talk general game, I don't think the guy can make a bigger announcement or a bigger statement in terms of his impact on the game. He's had, in limited time against the Scarlets, it was an incredible job he did in terms of, I suppose, kicking those penalties. And the last one was an incredibly good kick, and he never looked like missing. And the same at the weekend. I know he missed he kicked 7 out of 8. But you know, as a 21-year-old to have, I suppose, the mental capacity to do that, and I think what a lot of people may not appreciate, it would be difficult to get to that pitch in terms of the mental pitch, the emotional pitch for the Edinburgh game, because so much, I suppose, of his energy would have been used up mentally in the preparation from coming on and doing such a good job. for Munster in that away game. And it is a jersey that holds such a huge interest to the public and to the supporters of Munster, the number 10 jersey ever since going back hundreds of years. Well, maybe not hundreds of years, but a number of years. And so it's always been, I suppose, a famous jersey. When you think of Tony Ward wearing it against the All Blacks in Thomond Park, and then a lot of people, I suppose over the years, not many people have worn that, but they've had a responsibility, and that's the way that jersey, I suppose, was presented to whoever wore it in that regard. So he has really, really hit the ground running. The weakness of my argument is the fact that I haven't seen him train. So I don't know, Joe, and the fact that you see much, so much more in a training week than you would in a potential 80 minutes of a game. And that's the reality for so many of the players. You kind of get an awful better judgment if you can actually do a training week with them. But what he has done is he has taken his opportunity. He's would it be an exaggeration to say that he will expect to start in the jersey going forward? You would have to think yes. Even after two games, because I think, you know, his age profile is right. There's so many upsides to keeping him in the team. And if he continues to manage the game and kick the ball as well as he is at the minute, he'd be a very hard man to remove.
How would you describe his kicking technique, or what would strike you about it?
Kicking a goal?
Yeah.
Well, he kicks it point on, which for me, I wouldn't understand it at all, or I don't have any, I suppose, background in that. Obviously, for me, the first thing that jumps to mind would be, I'd associate that with South African kickers, because in the high veld and kicking the point and kicking, a ball seems to go very long, and those guys, they have it accurately. I think you remember a period when Ian Madigan kicked like that for Leinster, and I think over a long season he kicked incredibly accurate. For me, aligning up a kick a goal would be very, very different to how these guys would strike the ball, but each to their own.
And is one more in vogue than the other at the moment in world rugby?
That is a good question. I'm not too sure. I think anyone, I suppose, from the Northern Hemisphere, you know what I mean, the kicking gurus would be Dave Allred. His information in terms of, it's probably, he's been coaching, teaching, should I say, for the best part of 30, 40 years, and excelling in that domain. And anyone who kind of, I suppose, comes within his compass is fascinated by the progress or the strides you can make by adhering to his principles. But as you can see with Johnny Wilkinson, for example, would be the perfect pupil teacher ratio. But I think the benefit Johnny got working with Dave Allred would be the fact that he had him on a daily basis in Newcastle and with the England team, and Dave Allred's principles are quite detailed, and you got to understand it. And I can remember going through a period in my career where I kind of tried to learn by email and by distance learning, and I found it very difficult, Joe. So I took an awful lot of benefit from his ideas, I think, but in terms of mastering them, I would say it was a little bit more of trial and error as opposed to actually bulletproof technique.
And he preaches a different style to what Healy is doing.
I don't even know, because from the goal kicking, but like, it seems to me that it's a telescopic tee, or I could be maybe it's, there's actually new, there's been a number of inventions and tees in the last number of years. So whatever way, whatever make of the tee is, that isn't the most important point. It's how you place the ball and how you approach it and where you hit it. I would never have kicked the point of the ball, if you get me. I would have been obviously lining up with the seams directly over the black dot and coming in at an angle to kind of kick through the ball, while these just obviously they have the point focused on a spot and they drill through the point of the ball, and it propels in an end-over-end fashion.
And you really saw that actually with his last-minute kick against Scarlets last week from distance. You know, you could see that technique.
Yes.
Is one considered more accurate than the other, or
no? I think that's why it's very important for the young kids too, that if you copy someone, you'll only be ever as good as them. While if you actually get to tweak and a little bit of trial and error and self-discovery with yourself, then you maybe might have a technique that can be better than anyone's. So I think what's crucial for me, and when watching young fellas coming through now, is that you the most important thing is that they're natural, and then I think you can add on layers of detail little by little, because there are obviously some fundamentals that need to be adhere to if you're looking to kick the ball consistently well and accurately.
Mm. It strikes me looking at him, you know, it's just gone so well, you know, and as you know better than anyone, there'll be ups and downs with this now. If Munster try to invest in him and fast track him, he can't make every kick. That's just the game. But the fact that he came in and made these pressure kicks early on does suggest a certain temperament that is required to play the number 10 jersey for Munster.
Yeah, and even more so, I think, from his reaction of kicking the winning penalty in Scarlett's. If that was me, I wouldn't been able to keep the smile off my face running back. There's no doubt about it. You're 21 years of age. It's your biggest opportunity. It's a massive kick. And his body language just kind of said, well, I actually expect to get this.
Yeah.
What's the fuss about nearly? And then I think to back it up at the weekend was very, very impressive. And 21 is still so young in a number 10 jersey. And, I think he has absolutely grasped his opportunity, and he demands to be selected again.
I would suspect the younger generation coming through now, like Healy, are more exposed to some of the principles you probably had to learn through your 20s, be it compartmentalization or visualization.
Yeah.
I'd say they've built on the stuff that you were exposed to at a later age, I would suspect.
Yeah, I would agree with that too. But also, unfortunately, for their point of view, I was allowed to make mistakes and still get reselected. Well, it's very rare nowadays that a coach has probably the opportunity to stick with a guy who he'd feel, unless he is extremely strong, has huge potential, and makes errors, because the now is the most important thing in sport, and we all need results. But that was, I suppose, a massive advantage for me, that the quality of, or the competition is probably greater nowadays for you to stake a claim to get into a team.
I'm sure there are days you played really, really well but didn't kick well, and people said, oh, he didn't have a good game. So, kicking dictates a lot, and it covers a multitude. If we park his kicking, his place kicking for a moment at goal, what about his general play, his hands and his kicking from hands? This guy's going to take time to develop. Where is his game?
His game is in its infancy, I would say, in the fact of, I've only seen him in two games,
sure.
Joe. I think a memory I have, though, is I do recall a highlights clip last year of a right foot spiral to a right touchline of over 50 metres. So for you to understand that, it's probably the most difficult kick in terms of, attempting it. But I think actually when you master the spiral and you understand the flight of the ball, it actually becomes like any other kick, in the fact that you'll actually get, if you hit a good spiral, the ball at the end will tail off to the right, so you get kind of the capacity of the ball to fly, and then at the end it'll arc back out towards the right touchline for a right footer. So this thing about the angle, and you need a left-footed kicker to be kicking to a right-handed touchline, is inaccurate, completely inaccurate, because if you can kick spiral the ball well or end over end on a right footer to a right touchline, once you have your angle correct, you can do anything. So I recall it actually hit me like a train watching that. It was like, whoa, maybe because I have an incredibly soft spot for boys spiraling the ball. It was really, really impressive. his phase game, his running game, his passing, his decision making. I'm in the can't give a verdict, Joe, yet at this stage. I haven't looked at Munster's games in depth, and it would be unfair or not accurate to comment on his general game.
No, that's fair, and there's no point doing that if you're not confident or able to give an opinion that you can stick with. I mean, it's exciting because the Joey Carberry situation rumbles on, and Munster are desperate for a number 10. So this guy comes on and shows the right temperament, and you know, people associate those clutch kicks with your era, and he's done that. And he had beside him Craig Casey, who by all accounts was excellent, and Alex McHenry was at 13. So a lot of young guns thrown in here, and that gets everybody a bit excited. Casey continues to do very well.
Yeah, young and local as well. I think that's very important. The fact that you've got to have guys that are from the area, that it really matters to them, that it really cares. And I think that's been the strength of Irish rugby from going back as many years as I can remember. You've got to have these guys that will give everything. Yeah, and I think obviously Casey has been fast-tracked to play at this level for a long time. I've heard murmurings of him for a number of years. And
what were people saying to you about him?
I think that he's a ball of energy, that he just loves it. He's a massive fan of the game of rugby, and you can see that's the way he plays. It matters to him. He puts his heart and soul into it. I suppose the biggest thing is that people associate it. It's kind of like another stringer. And that's I think, what people associate it, that he's a terrier. But he's also, he looks interesting. But for me, it's hard because when you haven't seen a guy for a number of games, it's very, very difficult to give an accurate assessment of where actually he is, Joe.
On Munster generally, and it's probably hard to be too critical of them in the midst of this pandemic. You know, you hear Johan van Graan announcing the team over Microsoft Teams this week. They basically had no FaceTime. But certainly the performance against the Scarlets was criticised. Donal Lenehan, for instance, was writing about it in The Examiner and was very frustrated. You know, he was saying things like Chris Farrell scored a try in the 68th minute, and he was saying that was the first time in the entire second half that Farrell had even touched the ball. And you're bringing in D'Alande for what? And, you know, we're seeing box kicks on the opposition 22, and he's wondering what is Stephen Larkham's role in all of this. And he was just very frustrated with the style of play and where are Munster going with this, because they can't just keep doing the same thing over and over again. Where are you on that point?
Well, there's a lot in your question. I think the most important thing really is that how they play would be decided by obviously Johan van Graan and Stephen Larkham, but also with the senior players. If the senior players aren't happy with how they're playing, they've got to voice that opinion to them. But I think there was definitely an early example, and I think it didn't happen again in the game. But Munster were outside the 22 of the Scarlets and decided to box kick the ball. So they've obviously identified a weakness potentially in a Scarlets defender to go after that space. But I think when you have people like D'Alande and Farrell, you have to respect the weather conditions too, Joe, in terms of how you got to play conditions. That is absolutely crucial, and that's not making excuses for it. But I think what will happen, I would say, would be that in terms of the coaching staff would have a vision how they want to play. Are they struggling in getting their message across to the players, or are the players struggling to understand the message? So there's a little bit in that as well, and I have it with my own club in terms of, I suppose, last year bringing in a more structured game from the traditional DNA of Stade Rochelais, which is playing the ball out of the tackle. But playing the ball out of the tackle is well and good if you can see who you're passing to, as opposed to passing to the opposition when you're doing blind offloads. So I think from that regard, it's always in successful teams that I've been involved in over 20 years. It's a process that's dealt with by the leadership group and by the senior players and with the coaching staff. If there's discontent within the playing group, they would voice that, I would say, to the coaching group, and then a solution has to be found. Where am I on it in terms of do I see the work of Stephen Larkham at the minute? No, you probably don't, but that's to be expected. Anyone who probably, because I know Stephen well, quite well from playing with him and discussing rugby with him, and he's got a really good brain about the game. But it's a little bit like me going to Super Rugby a bit. It's a different game at the start, and I think then you've got to understand it first, and then you've got to implement your policies and your plays. And I think that will come. But also, the Scarlets game was a dog of a day with the desperate weather, and yeah. And the Edinburgh didn't look much better. But I would say, they, as a coaching group, I would say they would be most acutely aware of being aware of the threat of moving the opposition and playing the game at wits, because their kicking game is there, but what they need to add is probably a layer or two in terms of moving the team around the park a little bit better.
Okay. A very last quick one for you. Jordan Armour, dislocated shoulder. He's out of the Six Nations now this side of Christmas. Who's Ireland's best 15 at the moment?
That's a big loss, I think. Obviously, it's exactly what happens, I think, with a lot of international players. They peak for their club team, they excel, then they excel for Ireland, then they have a bit of a rocky period, and then they have to rebound from that. And, against Saracens and against in one or two games for Ireland, Jordan Armour probably didn't do as well as he would have liked to have done in the air when winning the high ball. But I think we all understand how much of a running threat he is, but test rugby is brutal and it's ruthless, and you get exposed in terms of one or two deficiencies in your game, and that's what happened. But I'm absolutely convinced that he has a massive future at 15. But these are always the stumbling blocks you hit. Who is Ireland's 15? Well, there's, I would say, the for me, it's I'm having a name blank. The Ulster 15, sorry.
Stockdale?
No, sorry.
Addison?
But he's on a long-term injury.
He's injured as well, yeah.
Yeah, I think that he will have, I would say they will look at him definitely in the role for 15.
He can't seem to get his body right at all. And, you know, it's really tough, but he can't seem to get a run.
Yeah, that's gone on a long time now, isn't it? Because that's prior.
It's World Cup territory, even.
Yes, exactly. I always liked him as a potential option. I think, obviously, Hugo Keenan has he seems to be grabbing a lot of highlights, and you must be exceptional if you're grabbing headlights or highlights in Leinster, because they have a pretty high basic level there, obviously. The other options are Jacob Stockdale. No, I think Jacob Stockdale would probably like to find his form on the wing if he gets that opportunity. I think it's too big an ask to come in and try and run or excel at 15 when he needs to find form on the wing for me. So it's... who else am I missing?
I'm not sure. I'll have to look at the squad.
Yeah, because it was in Munster, Shane Daly has obviously done really well. Will he be, is it the right match to put him into Twickenham for? Probably not. But sometimes you need to give these kids a go and you see what they're made of, and if you're young enough, you're good enough. So that's probably a position. Obviously now with Jordan Armour out, but I'm not too sure where he would have played anyway. So there's obviously going to be, I'd say, if you're a selector with the Irish team, there's in your makeup of your teams, you're potentially looking at three different options going forward.
Well, Daly's in there anyway, so he's one of the options.
Yes.
Well, we'll see. They have the Italian game first off, and then France away, and then Twickenham looms. So there's some interesting.
If these games go ahead.
Yeah. Big if at the moment, it feels like. Listen, thanks so much for that this evening. We'll let you go. Stay safe. Thanks a million, Ronan.
Yeah, you too, Joe. Good to chat. Thanks a million.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.